Welcome to Zuma Worldwide's Health Education Conference Call. This recording is for educational purposes only. The name brand products referenced are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or mitigate any disease or illness. Health testimonies represent the personal experiences of the individuals and should not be viewed as medical advice. Please enjoy today's call.
Thanks for being here on the fly tonight. This is Ken Marsh, Zuma's Health Education Call number 2 for 2024. And I'm glad you're here. Hopefully your new year is off to a great start. Hopefully if you're like most people, me included, by the way, you've kind of gotten a little refocused on taking better care of yourself as we've come through the holiday season and making sure that you're practicing a little prevention, especially these days, right? We've got a lot of cold and flus and sicknesses out there. And it seems like you hear about somebody new every day that's not feeling well. So I'll just use this as a little public service announcement time to remind you guys to keep your immune system strong. As many of you know, we've got some great products in Zuma's line to help you do that. But tonight, we're not necessarily talking about immune system, but we are talking about mental health. And it's certainly a condition that I know affects a lot of people in our modern world. Chances are, if I were to ask those of you listening in tonight, if you've known somebody who has suffered or sadly maybe passed away from that condition, there's probably many of you on this phone, maybe all of you tonight could relate to that with somebody you knew or a friend or a family member. So it's an important topic and one that I certainly am excited to learn more about myself tonight because I am not your trainer. Tonight we have our guest speaker. She's a member of Zuma's Scientific Advisory Board. She's a naturopathic doctor, health practitioner, practicing each and every day in her home state of Georgia and lots of folks enjoy more abundant health and doing it in a way that's a lot more holistically and naturally orientated than we typically get in our modern world. So I'm always excited when she comes on the line to share some information with us because she's got a wealth of it. And, of course, I'm talking about our very own Dr. Melissa Bennett. So, Dr. Melissa, are you with me?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So, anyway, I know this is kind of a specific topic because it's not – you know, not everyone has Parkinson's, although it is very prevalent, a lot more than what we thought. And I think that's the thing about it. You hear about it, but usually you'll hear about it from, like, my friend's friend, you know, was diagnosed with that, and it doesn't hit home. But to some people, it really does. And I actually speak in front of independent living personal care home. And I go in there and I do talks for the Parkinson's group. And it's kind of funny because I'm talking, you know, and I'm not on the phone. I'm actually standing in front of these people and I'm looking at them and half of them are asleep. And then at the end they go, Dr. Bennett, we really wanted to hear it. And I said, don't worry, I'll repeat myself multiple times throughout the year, so you'll get to hear it. Don't worry about it. But it's really funny. And you really have to have some self-esteem to talk in front of sleeping people because, you know, they can't keep their eyes open a lot. So but it's very good. It's very enriching to me to be able to share information with them. And some of them, though, are sitting there diligently, like, taking notes. So those are the ones that's really in there. And I'm like, okay, the people that are falling asleep, those are the people probably toward the back of the bus in high school. You know, you always had the kids to sit in front, people to sit in the back. And I'm thinking, those people, they didn't pay attention to the teacher. And the other ones are up there, like, taking notes and all of that. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about Parkinson's. First of all, I mean, most people know what Parkinson's is, but it's just in case, I'm going to give a brief overview of it. It's a neurodegenerative disorder, and it's kind of where the nerve cells in the brain, they slowly start to die off over time. It's, like I said, it's like the second most common neurodegenerative disease, and Alzheimer's is first, but it's right there with Alzheimer's. And over the age of 60, you're going to see about 1 in 100 patients, which ends up being, I think, like 1.5 million people throughout the United States having Parkinson's. So, it's just one of those diseases that it's debilitating and it's a horrible disease. But even when I'm speaking to the Parkinson's group, you've got some people who are like hardly any symptoms and they're elderly. And then you have other people that are very, you know, debilitated having things. So what we're going to talk about here is just certain things. I'm going to go over certain things that may be able to help people, hopefully from a preventative standpoint, but then also if they've already been diagnosed with it, might be something they want to look into. And, you know, Parkinson's itself was named after Dr. Parkinson's. He wrote a book, I think, in the 1800s. It was called Shaking Palsy. It hadn't been named Parkinson's at that point. Another person came along and actually called it Parkinson's based on the book that was written by Dr. Parkinson's. And there's certain people that we know of, you know, that do have Parkinson's, but most, like Michael J. Fox, you know, he was really young when he was diagnosed. Muhammad Ali, Kurt Gibson, and Johnny Cash. I did not know personally that Johnny Cash or Kurt Gibson or Muhammad Ali had Parkinson's. I always heard of Michael J. Fox, but these other people also had, you know, had Parkinson's. And you'll also see people diagnosed usually between the age of 60 and 70, and you'll see slightly more men than women diagnosed with Parkinson's. Now, the other, there's some things out there, you know, when you think of Parkinson's, people always think of the shaking, that the tremors that go on, but that's a myth. You really don't have to shake to have Parkinson's. 20% of patients don't even have tremors. So, but you do, 80% of them do. So we know that tremors can occur in certain body parts and hands and arms and legs. And it seems to, they found that it seems to be more active sometimes when people are at rest. It'll be, it's weird. It can go either way. So some people have the opposite. It can be more active when they are active, but typically you'll see when sometimes at rest, it'll become more active, and symptoms seem to start more on one side and then kind of move to the other side of the body. So you may see these patients like present with like rigidity. That's not at the present at the beginning of the disease, but it can be progressive. Handwriting, sometimes if you notice a loved one, if their handwriting starts off and you notice it gets cramped, starts off larger and gets smaller, that's one of the signs that they may want to get checked out. They also can have like kind of a slowness or absence of movement. Some people may say that one side of their body is not moving as well as the other side, and they can have constipation. They can have problems, you know, swallowing, and their gait can be off as well. So when they're walking, they could actually, you know, not be balanced. And, you know, that's the other thing. It can mimic a lot of other things. So sometimes getting it diagnosed is a little difficult because everything can fall into these categories. So you really have to also look at the genetics, you know, from that and just make sure that if there's family members, you know, you definitely want to get checked out. But at the same time, you can look at these little signs if someone starts having, like, balance issues, their posture starts to change and stuff like that, then that's something you may want to look at, you know, from that standpoint. But so that's kind of a brief overview of Parkinson's. But I like focusing, and that's the disease process. And, you know, as a naturopath, we don't really want to focus on the disease. We want to focus on, okay, well, you've been diagnosed with something, so let's figure out what we can do about it. Because we want to try to figure out, first of all, the cause, like why is this happening? And secondly, how can we prevent it, hopefully, from progressing to a point of where it's debilitating? I mean, that's the biggest thing with any disease process. I have a patient, her mom has MS, she has MS, her sister has MS, and the mom and sister hardly have any symptoms of MS, but she has really bad symptoms of MS. So, and it's a family, right? So you have two out of three didn't have an issue, but then you have the one that is having a lot more issues. So you kind of want to address different factors that could be playing a part. And so I'm going to discuss Parkinson's like from a more holistic perspective. And you kind of want to look at the essential nutrients for Parkinson's. That's really important. So we know that pregnant women need more folic acid. If you're in an accident and you're burned, you know, you're going to need more protein to have the healing of the skin. Even a smoker needs more vitamin C. So anytime you're looking at a chronic, stressful disease like Parkinson's, you're going to look at unique nutritional requirements for Parkinson's. Unfortunately, the guidelines set in place for Parkinson's are based on government guidelines, and they leave it kind of up to the patient to figure out their own nutritional deficiency. So they give very general guidelines. So when someone has Parkinson's or a family member has it, they kind of get lost in that because it's just your basic, I guess it's basic. The government can't go through every single disease and come up with what works for that. So there's a lot of independent studies that have gone on that can really help people start to really look at how nutrition plays a role with Parkinson's. And the first thing we're going to look at is CoQ10, coenzyme Q10. A lot of times you'll hear that. They'll say, okay, if you're on a statin, take a CoQ10 because the statin can deplete CoQ10. And when you look at CoQ10 deficiency, you do see that. There's several studies out there that have shown that Parkinson patients may have CoQ10 deficiency. And then other studies say, no, CoQ10 doesn't really have an effect on Parkinson's. But I personally, this is me personally, I think CoQ10 is important because CoQ10 protects dopamine-producing regions in your brain. So dopamine has a big play in Parkinson's. So indirectly, when you look at that, CoQ10 can help support dopamine, right, in the brain, and that should help Parkinson's patients because dopamine is one of the issues. So if you think about it, it's like a pool shot. Like you're shooting a pool, you got a little pool cue, and you're shooting that ball. So one ball hits another ball, knocks it into the pocket. So if you're low in CoQ10, then your dopamine levels may not be protected. Therefore, I think CoQ10 plays a big role in Parkinson's. Now here's another thought process. If you look at statins, and they deplete CoQ10, and then, it would be funny, or not funny, haha, but it would be nice to see a study that shows how many people were taking a certain medication and then all of a sudden developed Parkinson's. I don't know if there's a study out there like that because that study would probably not be published. my own idea about looking at Parkinson's from the standpoint of, one thing can cause another thing, because no one realizes that each thing you put into your body can have an effect and also affect a different area. So if the Parkinson's patient has a CoQ10 deficiency, then they need to go ahead and start supplementing with that. And I do, in my office, is the Olive Leaf. I'm in Atlanta, like you were saying, and I do micronutrient testing, which is a blood test, and I can do it like all over the United States. I can send it out, but it kind of goes back and it's like an A1C, like when they're checking your blood sugar, and it will check to see what your nutrient levels are over the past 3 months, like the average. So CoQ10 is one of those that I check in that nutrient test just to make sure, that that's in a good place. And if it's not, then we're going to figure out how to supplement with that. The other thing that we have to look at is another nutrient that's never mentioned is lithium. And our bodies, as we know, need sodium, potassium, magnesium, and calcium, but we also need lithium. And lithium, all you think about when you think of lithium is, someone was on having a mental issue, and they put them on lithium to help them go through that. But lithium is, we all need lithium. In fact, every cell in our body needs lithium, and it's a required nutrient, but our bodies do not make it. So we have to usually get lithium in from an outside source because lithium helps the neurons in our brain cells and because our brain cells need a lot more lithium. So the lower amount of lithium in an area, then the worse outcomes for like mental issues. In fact, in Texas, they had very low amounts of lithium in their water. So there was more psychosis, there was more violent crime, impulse control disorders. So all these things came into play because the body wasn't receiving lithium. Now, some studies have shown that Parkinson's patients were 74 times lower with undetectable levels of lithium. So when you think about that, you're like, okay, the general population has low lithium in some places, but you have Parkinson's patients, and they're really low in lithium. And the true only way to measure lithium is through hair testing. So you can't measure it. It's very hard to measure any other way. And you really shouldn't supplement lithium without testing. So you can test for heavy metals through hair, but you take about an inch off the scalp, and then you can check your lithium levels. And there was an article in the New York Times in a study in Finland that showed lower levels of lithium in the water supply was also linked to Alzheimer's. So these are two neurodegenerative diseases that can be linked to having low levels of lithium. And like I was, you know, earlier, Ken, I texted you because I was like, I know that H2O, I was thinking, I wanted to verify, definitely has a little lithium in there. And we know that these trace minerals in our soil have been depleted. And even when, even the soil, the minerals that are in the soil, when you think about it, they're unevenly distributed through the Earth's crust. So this is why we have iodized salt, right? Because it's the same way with lithium. Sometimes you have to fortify, they're fortifying iodine because they can't get enough of it, so they fortify the salt. I don't see anyone fortifying lithium anytime soon. So the closest we have to getting a form of lithium from a micronutrient standpoint is through X2O. And, you know, the funny part about that is we just take X2O for granted because it has so many amazing components that can help degenerative diseases like this that we don't even think about that. So it's like one of those things that we just think, oh, yeah, we're getting hydrated, we're getting our body alkalized, we're getting our pH balanced. But what we're really doing is we're putting some really important trace minerals in there, like lithium, that we're not getting from other sources. Another element that, or another nutrient that we have to look at, too, is, and they actually did studies in 1982, there was a publication and it came out and it suggested that Parkinson's disease could be in part caused by a glutathione deficiency. And now we know that glutathione is lower, again, for Parkinson's patients. When they've autopsied, they find that the glutathione level is 40% lower than it was in the general population. So if you look at glutathione, Dr. Oz did a great analogy of glutathione. He said it was the master antioxidant. And he had this, you know, he has a big stage set up, and he had this crane, and this crane comes over and picks up a ball, and he goes, that's like glutathione picking up free radicals and moving it out of the body. So glutathione is one of those things that we need. It's anti-cancer. Obviously, it's, you know, I would say anti-Parkinson's if you're looking at it from the standpoint that like a 60-year-old person has 30% less than a 20-year-old person, if you're looking at glutathione levels, but a Parkinson's patient, they're 40% lower in glutathione. And excuse me. And I think that right there kind of shows that it's not just a general population issue. It's the fact that when you look at Parkinson's patients, they're even more so in these areas, like with lithium, with glutathione, all of those things. So if you have a glutathione deficiency, that is like, when I think about a cascade of cards, that's one of the main things you want to look at the beginning of Parkinson's, because it's like you, before you lose your neurons, before dopamine gets affected, which is a big component of glutathione, before any of the, I mean, I'm sorry, a big component of Parkinson's, before any of that happens, there's going to be this glutathione deficiency that you could start working on. And even if you have Parkinson's, there are studies out there and where you can use glutathione. Now, here's the problem with glutathione. A lot of times it's getting a good source of glutathione. There's not a lot of good things. Unfortunately, we're just not regulated in the industry as far as when you go to the store and you buy a supplement, you're just not going to get high quality. There's not a lot of regulation in that. In fact, they could put like 80% filler and 20% whatever the supplement is, and then it's okay. So that's why I love Zuma, because you guys have such good quality control in these areas where a lot of people will run out and start buying all kinds of stuff and then realize that, wait a minute, you know, I'm not really feeling any different because you're basically not getting anything that's beneficial. So with glutathione, they wanted to use nasal inhalers, but that is so expensive. I think it's like $350 a month to get that. You'd have to have a compound pharmacy. So what I usually recommend is just getting a good liposomal glutathione that can help. Liposomal means it's coated, so it can go into and get into the small intestine, and it's something that you don't have to worry about breaking down as much. So when you're looking at those supplements, those are the, you know, looking at lithium, looking at CoQ10, looking at glutathione, those are three supplements that are very helpful for that. And then when you look at the diet, they've done studies for Parkinson's patients, and over like 30 to 40 years. And we look at all the different things that can contribute to our food sources and everything else. So there's a lot of people out there saying, well, maybe they were exposed to this chemical or maybe they were exposed to that. Well, once you have Parkinson's, you don't really care anymore, right? Because at that point, you got to figure out, well, what do I do now? This is a diagnosis. So from a preventative standpoint, of course, you're going to take away things that are chemical from your environment, because that's just going to be less stress on your body. So you want to kind of do some housekeeping, making sure that you don't have a bunch of Glade air freshener plug-ins, using harsh chemicals around your house. Keep it as simple as possible so that your body can focus on healing. You also want to make sure that whatever you're doing from an eating standpoint, you know, they've done some studies and they've seen that people, obviously it's just like any type of food, when we look at the good foods that we can eat, you want to stay away from heavy, you know, red meat, the processed food and all of that. Dairy, believe it or not, was the one thing that across all studies, dairy came up. So if people are consuming high amounts of dairy and they have Parkinson's, I would really look into that even more, research dairy and Parkinson's, because there are, in all the studies, dairy was the one common denominator that kept popping up that may not be good for Parkinson's patients. But other things that we look at, you know, the red meat, the fried foods, canned fruits and vegetables, these people have a faster rate of progression than the people who try to eat, you know, healthier foods. And the healthier foods can actually come from finding like local farmers, just going to the fruit stands and getting things like that. Try not to rely completely on all the foods that are just in your grocery store. You know, get out there and do some research and around the area. And I think you can even research like local farms around your area, and actually start getting those fresh vegetables, those fruits, those nuts and seeds, non-fried fish, olive oil, coconut oil, spices, fresh herbs, green tea are some of the things that you can use, and even coffee, believe it or not. Some of these things are actually been shown Parkinson's patients have a lower incidence of Parkinson's when they were consuming those foods, which to me sounds like a Mediterranean kind of diet, right? You're eating the healthy oils, which makes sense because that's going to help your brain from that standpoint. And, you know, when we look at also, you know, getting our vitamins, we also have to look at, they did studies and people that isolate themselves actually have higher levels of Parkinson's as well. The people that are involved in social activities, people that keep themselves moving. And I'm not talking that they had studies where if they did 2 days of exercise a week, it really didn't do anything. And 2 days is better than no exercise. So, but you really want to be moving at least 30 minutes a day, every day, because that keeps everything kind of where your brain is communicating with the body. It's not just about getting your heart rate up, but in Parkinson's, it's about keeping everything, you know, from the standpoint of from above down, inside out, you just want to keep everything moving. And an example of this lady did not have Parkinson's, but I went to visit this little elderly woman in the hospital, and her daughter is ready to, like, put her in a nursing home. She's like, oh, I'm sorry, she's ready to send her to hospice is what she was ready to do. And she's like, my mom, it was kind of weird. She's like, she's not going to make it. She's going to go to hospice. And I was like, really? I said, because she can't swallow, right? And so I talked to this little lady, and I was, like, in the room, and I prayed over her. And I prayed over her throat, and I told her, just like the doctors were saying, you have to keep that communication pathway open, so you've got to practice moving your hands or moving your feet so that your brain can teach you again how to swallow. And that's exactly what happened to her. She was able to swallow. She's living. She's in a nursing home now. She's not in hospice, and it's been like 9 months. And that's kind of how exercise is. The more you get used to moving, because your Parkinson's, when you think about it, it's debilitating. So you have to get into a place where, I don't care if you're walking, if you're doing any type of exercise, even the exercise they said that really helped, believe it or not, is rock climbing. And I'm like, that'd be kind of scary for even myself. But if you're in a controlled environment and they are able to help you, like, navigate up the wall, I think it's about creating those neural pathways so that your body still it can communicate with itself. So exercise is extremely important. Diet obviously is important, like I was saying. But the other thing, and also being social, like don't isolate yourself, because being social, having that community keeps people healthy, believe it or not. It's just one of those things that if you are socially involved, they found that that helps Parkinson's patients. Sorry, that's my dog interrupting me in the background. Whoops. From there. So, again, you know, what we want to focus on is also keeping the gut in a good place, because when you think of Parkinson's, you think of dopamine. When you think of dopamine, you think of where your neurotransmitters made, in the gut. So you've got to get your gut in a good place, because you want to have those healthy neurotransmitters, you know, moving and having the environment to keep those neurotransmitters in a place that can help you stay balanced. And dopamine is one of those things that Parkinson's patients are just very low on, but there's ways of getting that elevated. And I do neurotransmitter testing in my office as well, where I check serotonin, dopamine, all the excitatory neurotransmitters and the inhibitory neurotransmitters, and I try to help balance those out as naturally as I can. So we have to look at the gut, and then we have to look at if the neurotransmitters have been depleted for any reason, then we're balancing those back. And then we're looking at micronutrient levels to make sure that there's no nutrient deficiencies. And staying in that realm, you're able to build the body back. I don't care what disease process it is. You're able to get the body built back to where it can handle things and hopefully slow down progression of Parkinson's. I mean, that's so important, is to slow down the progression. Another thing really quick I want to throw in, like I was saying, the CoQ10 is really good, glutathione. Turmeric with curcumin is also another, it's an herb that's been studied that has helped Parkinson's patients. So those are really good. So you want to kind of, doesn't mean run out and get them at your store. You got to be careful. You got to do some research before you start buying stuff and make sure you're getting high quality supplements. It's just, I can't stress that enough. It's so important. And then obviously taking the X2O, we get all those trace minerals that's in the body that we can get into our bodies that can help if we're depleted in any area. That's it, Ken. I just wanted to kind of highlight just certain aspects of it so people can understand, you know, what it is, and then some things they can do to help keep themselves in a good place. And I think if they can do that, they can hopefully slow down the progression of it, which is really important. And just really quick, you can tell the people I'm talking to, like I said, one group over here, no issue at all, hardly any symptoms. And then the other group just totally can't even, you know, just stow away their faces. It's just everything's so slow. So it really kind of gives you more freedom to know that you're able to kind of come back and do something to hopefully inhibit it from getting to the point of where these other people are, because that's very sad. But then you see the other people that are okay, and you're like, hey, your body's amazing. It's fearfully and wonderfully made, and we just need to speak life over it no matter what it has, and know that God's ultimately the one that we can trust, that he's our healer. So we just got to speak that life over ourselves. I don't care what disease process it is. All right. I am finished now. That was a lot of information.
No, that's a ton of great information, obviously, in a super short period of time. So I'll just make a couple quick comments kind of on what you shared tonight. I'm with you. I mean, I use X2O every day, of course. That's part of my daily regimen. I know you do too. One of the other reminders I'll give to everybody listening in is, remember, guys, we now have the X2O Plus, which would allow you to consume even more of those incredible X2O minerals. Remember, the X2O Plus is nothing more than us grinding up those minerals that you see in your X2O sachets, bringing them into a powdered form, and putting more of them in a capsule, along with, of course, some other things like the vitamin D, vitamin K2, and there's additional magnesium added to that product as well. But if you're looking to get more of that lithium trace mineral, that would be a great way to do it, especially if you're maybe not drinking as much of the X2O water as you would like, or you think you should. So that's another great little tip there on getting more of those trace minerals. And one of the other things I like that you mentioned, Melissa, is the fact that you know, diet does play an important role. And it's interesting, as you were talking about the gut, you know, they're linking so many, you know, common, sadly scary dysfunctions that we see as a modern world today to gut dysfunction. Parkinson's definitely being one of them, Alzheimer's being another. I mean, and the list just goes on and on about things that they're now linking to gut dysfunction. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because obviously diet plays a big role there. You know, what we're eating, what we're drinking definitely affects how healthy our gut is. And then, of course, shoring up the gut health is always a smart idea. And, of course, in Zuma's line, we've got the Zyome 365 as well as the probiotics, two great assets to keeping your gut health in great shape. So I appreciate you bringing that out, because, you know, it's interesting how many times people will have ailments, and I know you see this all the time in your practice, and when you start to analyze their lack of nutrition, meaning they're, A, probably not doing any supplements or very few, right? And number two, you start to analyze their typical daily, weekly diet, and you can start to really see clearly, you know, how there's a lot of potential for dysfunction in the body and leading to things, including, you know, serious things like Parkinson's.
Well, and that's true, because the gut, basically, it contains the same neurons a lot of times, as and most Parkinson's patients experience constipation years before their brain symptoms emerge. So even before the disease is diagnosed, they'll start to have gut issues way before then. So it's just one of those things where they're just now linking, like, the gut into, well, they've always kind of did it, but they didn't know a lot about the microbiome or anything like that. But I think there is, like, different, like, proteins that are in the gut, and these proteins, they say, they become misfolded, and then they accumulate inside the neurons and they poison the cells. I mean, it's fascinating when you get into that level of knowing about, like, what's going on inside the microbiome and how that's affecting everything else in our body. So the good news is if we're able to control that, which we are, because we have the ability now to repair, like, the leaky gut. You know, you guys have probiotics. You've got the gut repair, like, where the Zyome, oh gosh, I'm mispronouncing it. Help me out again.
Zyome 365, right.
Yes, the Zyome 365. My aunt loves that, by the way. She started taking it, and she was having some bad GI issues. Now, she also does not eat the best. She's in my basement, and I don't lock her down there, but she's cooking on a little. She's made an oven. I don't even know. She's got a kitchen where she makes everything one at a time in a toaster oven. That's how she cooks down there. And but she had some pretty bad gut issues for a while, and she couldn't get rid of, like, diarrhea. And so I gave her that, you know, and then she started taking it. She loves it, and it's cleared it up. I mean, it's clearing it up. So to me, that was so cool. When you love the products when you can see them work as well, like it, with family members. I see it all the time with patients. I can start them out on X2O. And then a week later, I'm checking their pH and checking their hydration, and it's just on point because they're drinking the X2O. And if they're not drinking it for any reason, I can tell them, because I'm like, oh, nope, something's going off here. You're not as hydrated. And I can tell exactly what they're doing, which is really cool.
That is really cool. And I'll make one final comment here before we wrap up tonight, and I love that you brought this up, is the coenzyme Q10. You know, while we don't really have a standalone coenzyme Q10 product in Zuma, it is one of the ingredients, and it's a fairly good dosage level within our natural selection. But for people who aren't using natural selection, I agree with you, they should definitely consider that, especially if they are on a statin drug. In fact, again, like you, that's my personal opinion. I had a friend over who is in his elderly years, and we were talking about his health, and he's not one to really talk to me much about the natural side, simply because it, you know, he's used to just going to the doctor and letting the doctor give him good guidance on whatever, you know, he feels he needs to have done on his health. But he mentioned to me that he was on a statin drug, and I said, oh, surely then your doctor encouraged you to be on CoQ10. And he was like, no, I didn't hear that. Why is that? And it was interesting. We had a great conversation about it. And sure enough, the next day he texted me and said, hey, I just want you to know I researched what you talked about last night, and after doing my own research, I decided CoQ10 is something I absolutely need if I'm going to be on this statin. So it was kind of interesting that, you know, sadly he doesn't usually turn to me for health advice, but yet his own doctor, who should have given him that advice, in my opinion,
well,
did not. So
again,
it was great to help him.
that's what makes me, that's why I mentioned that about CoQ10, and if you know what percentage of, like, Americans are on statins, and if they're not using CoQ10, and then we know CoQ10 could protect dopamine within the brain, and, you know, it's just, it's like connect the dots, like think and link, like you're going, makes me wonder, did that set someone up for maybe developing, because they cannot really identify why people get it, right? It's kind of one of those, they're like, well, we don't know, just as you get older, this can happen. But I don't believe that. I believe there's some catalyst that can trigger it. If you have a genetic predisposition for anything and you have that little catalyst that turns it on, upregulates a gene, and you don't know what that is. Could be glutathione, could be CoQ10. You just don't know. But you have the ability, even if you have Parkinson's, to start doing things now that can really, really help. And like I was saying, exercising, just moving 30 minutes a day is a huge thing. And then just getting, making sure you're hydrated, obviously, incorporating those, you know, supplements. If you need to do micronutrient testing or neurotransmitter testing or anything like that, you can always reach out to us too. We're at theoliveleaf.com, and we do that for people as well. So I just wanted to plug that because that's really helpful for patients, especially if they don't know what they need.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Melissa, as always, I appreciate your time and appreciate your knowledge and information to sharing with us. Thank you for everything that you do to support them. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You guys have a great night.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening in. And remember, first and third Thursday every single month, I encourage you to tune back in again. First Thursday in February, we've got another great call lined up. So until then, guys, take care of yourself. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.